TikTok has been in the news a lot lately. But did you know that as late as December 2023, YouTube remains teens' favorite social media platform? In fact, 93% of teens say they watch video content there regularly, compared to just 63% of teens who use TikTok, which means that 37% of their parents are saying no to TikTok. I think that's what it really means. So it's no wonder that more than a few teens might wonder if they could make a career out of being an online content creator too. Seems easy, right? Hey everyone, Adam Holtz here, your host of The Plugged In Show, focused on the family's weekly conversation about entertainment, pop culture, and technology. Thanks for joining us today. Well, once upon a time, kids wanted to be what? Teachers, firemen, doctors, and of course, astronauts, or maybe pro athletes. But in our connected social media world these days, the allure of becoming an online content creator is strong, whether we're talking about YouTube, TikTok, or some other social media platform. And a report last September from the Morning Consult found that 57% of Gen Zers want to become social media influencers. But here's what's interesting. It turns out that some of the most successful people in that space on YouTube especially seem to be headed for the exit. Kennedy Unthank recently wrote a blog post for Plugged In on this phenomena. In our first segment today, we're going to talk about some of the reasons why famous YouTubers are turning off the camera and that ubiquitous ring light that shows up in people's glasses and reflections, and what some of the costs are for cultivating a life of online celebrity. And in our second segment, Bob Hoos will join us to tell us everything we need to know about the new video game Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And you'll want to listen to that conversation because I'm going to ask him, why do they keep calling it Final Fantasy when they just keep making more and more of them? But I'm getting ahead of myself. We will get to that conversation in just a minute. And before we jump in, I want to remind you that The Plugged In Show is a production of Focus on the Family, and we are a donor-supported ministry. We hope our conversations each week encourage and equip you and your family in the area of entertainment and technology. And if we have helped you, we would invite you to consider supporting The Plugged In Show with a donation. And you'll find information on how to do that in the episode notes for today's show. We've had a number of folks who've done exactly that recently. And on behalf of our whole team, I want to say thank you. Well, with no further ado, let's dive in. Joining me for our first segment today are Kennedy Unthank, Emily Chow, and Kristen Smith. Hey, everyone.
Hi. Hello.
Well, for our icebreaker, I want to know who one of your favorite online influencers is. It can be a podcast. It can be a YouTube content creator, TikTok. I just want to know what gets your attention and you keep coming back to it and why.
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay, I was going to ask for volunteers.
Okay, so. I'm in the thick of parenting, so I like parenting things. But I really like Jackie Hill Perry and her husband. It's called With the Perrys. It's a podcast. And then another called M is for Mama. And it's this mom who has like 10 kids.
Holy cow.
Which feels wild. Yeah. But I listen to their stuff a lot. Super helpful.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, if I were to pick a podcast, I'd probably do Renewing Your Mind with R.C. Sproul.
Okay.
I'm a big theology podcast nerd. But if I were to pick a YouTuber, this one probably isn't Plugged In approved. In fact, we actually have a review on them. Viva La Dirt League. They make a lot of skits that kind of make fun of tropes and video games and movies and stuff. So.
Okay.
I don't really follow anybody.
Okay.
I don't have social media, and I'm not even on YouTube. When I do get on YouTube, it's usually because I'm looking for a very specific thing. But so I don't usually I'm like, oh, how to knit such and such, you know?
Yeah.
Or how to crochet something. But I do
so kind of do it yourself territory.
Yeah. And it's usually, like I said, a very specific need. But when I do listen to podcasts, I think my favorite podcasters right now would be Maggie Lawson and Tim Omundson. They host The Psychologists Are In, which is a psych rewatch podcast.
Okay.
And they were both on Psych. So it's like,
okay.
It's fun.
So it's kind of meta on like a whole bunch of levels, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's like how the show was made, and they go episode by episode. And so that was a show that I really liked when I was in high school. So it's fun to go back and see, like listen to how it was made and listen to them interview like other people who were on the show and writers writers and directors and all that stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go in a direction that probably none of you suspect. And you're going to have to laugh at me because I don't know the name of this creator. But my wife, every day, she gets on, I think it's on Facebook. She's on Facebook because she's not on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. She watches this content creator who has two corgis, and the corgis do things together, and then the content creator gives them both voices, like they're having a conversation.
That sounds cute.
And it is cute beyond comprehension. I'll hear her laughing in the other room. I'm like, oh, the corgis are on. And I'll come and stand behind her as she sits in her chair, and we watch these cute little corgi videos. And it's, she loves corgi videos of all kinds, but there's this one person who has two corgis, and it's adorable. I mean, and we just laugh and laugh and laugh. And I think we sometimes pick on social media, and there are lots of things to pick on, and we may talk about some of them today. But I do think sometimes, you know, having a moment to just laugh together at something can be kind of redemptive.
I think that funny animal videos, like really and truly, if you were to like analyze what has kept YouTube going all these years,
right?
It's cute animal videos.
Well, and I'll say one more thing. We were watching, and then I'm way off on the rabbit trail, speaking of animals. We were watching America's Funniest Home Videos the other night, which somehow... Man. Lo, these many decades later,
it's still hilarious.
It's still on. And I realized, wow, this was YouTube before YouTube existed.
Yeah. Right?
This was a totally prophetic show about where our culture was going. So, you know, you can all reflect on that for just a moment. And if you're listening to the Plugged In Show today, we would love to hear who your favorite online content creators are. And you can let us know by sending us an email at team@thepluggedinshow.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. All right, let's dive into our first segment for today. Kennedy, I mentioned in the introduction that you recently wrote a blog at Plugged In, and it's titled Retiring YouTubers Expose a Problem and the Solution. So let's dive in. What's the story here? And who are some of the YouTubers who are dialing back their content significantly?
Yeah, so I think the story starts with a YouTuber named Tom Scott. He's a guy who for many, many years would kind of go around and explain these really just strangely interesting things. Why is this river electrified? You know, let me explain
that. It's a good question.
Things like that. You know, just things you wouldn't probably normally think about, but, you know, he brings it to the forefront. He released a video in 2023 talking about how he was getting tired of what he was doing and how he loved his job a lot, but it was still just so tiring for him. And so he was going to take a step back, and he may not be gone forever, but he was going to be gone for a really good chunk of time at least. That seemed to spark a lot of other YouTubers' ideas
so
of retirement,
kind of,
such as Matt Pat, who other people might know as like Game Theory, Food Theory, Film Theory. He did all that. He also released a video saying, hey, pretty soon I'm going to be done. And that pretty soon came around actually in March of this year. He's stepping back. He's going to be working essentially behind the scenes now. He's no longer going to be in front of the camera. You have a bunch of other people. Meat Canyon, who does a lot of animation stuff. You have Captain Sparkles, who's a Minecraft YouTuber. Some pretty big name people for people who follow those kind of genres.
Mm-hmm.
And it's opened up this catalyst, as you said, to people realizing, oh, I can just leave.
Yeah.
Even something is like, my kids watch Blippi a lot, mm-hmm. but Blippi is no longer on screen. It's Blippi's other person. Someone that looks like Blippi, but it's not him.
Because Blippi got tired.
Blippi's tired, and Blippi's taking someone else, right? And so I think this is in a lot of categories.
I think it's really fascinating, and I wanted to ask you guys, why is this significance? And Kristen, you're already weighing in. Why does it matter that some of these folks are saying, I don't know that I want to do this anymore? It feels significant to me.
I think part of it is the natural cycle
of,
you know, YouTube came out, roughly 2 decades ago now.
Yeah.
And we're kind of at a natural cycle, I think, where people are starting to get to that age where if they started around that time,
right,
they're like, okay, well,
I'm tired.
I don't want to do this time. Anymore.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, let's say you were 20 something when you, if you started 20 years ago, you're like in your 40s now and you're kind of
twice as old.
Like you're literally just going like, I don't know. You just hit a certain age, I think, where you're like, you just want a different job. You might be a lot. I think you mentioned in your blog that a lot of them have been getting more serious about being part of their families and that, you know, when you're constantly grinding to get the job done, if you're just essentially you're a workaholic, I think that as you get older, different things are more valuable to you. It's like, I don't really care about being famous anymore. I care about being a good parent or being a good spouse.
Yep.
Yeah, and so I think there are a lot of reasons as to why people are doing this, you know, because some of them are leaving because of family. And when I say leaving, I don't always mean strictly just getting off the platform. A lot of them are either getting behind the scenes, as I said, or they're severely cutting their content or what they're known for instance. But there's a lot of reasons as to why, whether it's just it's too exhausting or they want to spend time with their families. But I think the biggest takeaway for people as to why this is important is it shows that the very real reality that a lot of these YouTubers have talked about for years, but are now kind of, a lot of them are putting their money where their mouth is that this is exhausting and it's not as glamorous as it may seem, especially to a lot of, you know, like teenagers who are thinking, oh, maybe I want to do that. Maybe it'd be super easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like feeding the beast. I mean, YouTube, specifically YouTube, and of course you can talk about this on Instagram or any other platform, but you are constantly, if you're going to monetize this, material matters, frequency matters, especially in our age where people want what they want and they want it quickly and attention spans are small. And so you have to be ready to produce enough content and dice it up to give people that is going to keep them entertained.
Yeah. One thing I think that can really showcase the exhaustion that comes from it is if you look at a lot of gaming YouTubers, most gaming YouTubers get really popular because of one specific game that they play.
Yeah.
Whether that's like Minecraft, or I know there's a lot of Rainbow Six Siege YouTubers, other video games, but they get popular because of one main game that they play. And then after a while, they're like most real people, get kind of bored with that game and they don't want to play it anymore.
They're locked in.
But then they try and go into another game and their entire fan base is like, where's Minecraft?
Yeah.
Well, why haven't you made more Minecraft videos?
Yeah.
And it just kind of feels like, well, if I don't make those, then I'm not going to be able to do this anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to do it.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to think about, what is it about being an online influencer that's attractive to young people? And some, by young people, maybe that's kids or maybe it's teens. Emily.
I think a lot of people get drawn in by, this happens maybe more so on social media influencing than strictly YouTube, but I think it happens across both. People get so excited when they're like, oh, I can get a sponsorship from this brand and they'll send me free things, because that's what we hear about, you know, especially on TV shows and movies. Like whenever they show an influencer in a TV show or movie, it's always a super, super rich person who is getting sponsored by all these different brands and getting all these free things. And, oh, you want a house? Here, have this house and, you know, film your life in it and you can have it for free, you know? And that's what you see on TV. And so you're like, oh, that's how easy it is. I could do what that person's doing.
Right.
Yeah, you know?
There's probably an element as well of just wanting to be liked.
Yep.
You know, I mean, like, people want to be liked. And so if you, not to say that you're not in real life, but in real life, if you're not, but you can create a persona to access that, I think it's pretty appealing.
Yep.
Because then you can have this friendship, this group that you're cultivating. I think maybe for older, people, I don't know, maybe older teenagers or young adults, monetization is a big appeal too. You know, I mean, like, there's jokes all the time about people that work, you know, our normal jobs, guys. But then there are 6-year-olds unboxing presents that make $1 million a year.
Well, and that's the thing is, it's just like, it's like the equivalent of watching an NBA game and thinking, well, I can shoot a basket.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there was an interesting article. It's a little bit older. It came out in 2021 in the Wall Street Journal. It said, TikTok's payout rate for people on the platform's exclusive creator fund, in that a video with 100,000 views earns $2. And so, you know, to my mind, I've never had 100,000 views on anything I have put on my social media, which admittedly ain't much, but it seems like a big number, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that kids get this idea that it's easy street. And so the two things here that we've been talking about are, you have to have a staggering number of views to yes. have like a livable income. But back to what you were saying, Kristen, and also some things you said, Kennedy, you got to feed the beast, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a quote in the article that you wrote from Jordan Marin, and he says, being successful in content creation requires you to dedicate your entire life to it. And Tom Scott said, I'm so tired, there's nothing in my life but work. And so I think you think, oh, I can make a video for half an hour and have a Lamborghini, as opposed to this is 18 hours a day staring into the abyss in the camera mm-hmm. for the rest of your life.
Yeah, there's actually a YouTuber who I didn't mention in the article who, to be clear, is not retiring, but he wanted to comment on the phenomenon. His name is Marcus Brownlee. His whole thing is he does a lot of tech reviews. Uh-huh. But he mentioned that YouTube content creation was very similar to the difference between like playing basketball for fun
right.
and playing it professionally.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, you can say, oh, I want to go down to the court and I want to shoot some baskets and I can dream about being an all-star one day.
Right.
But the people who are successful on YouTube, whose whole livelihoods depend on it,
yep.
are more similar to a professional athlete where you have to practice every day. You have to hone your skills. You have to refine. You have to readjust. You have to dedicate your entire life to it. You have to change your habits around it, stuff like that. And he says, that's the point at which people realize is that even if you do all that, you still might not be successful.
Yeah, I think when it comes to our kids wanting to do something like this, I think you have to ask two questions. Do you want to monetize or do you want a presence? And why?
Yeah.
And how? Like, how are we going to do this?
You have a marketing company to help people with social media.
Yes.
So you know what you're talking about.
Yes. There has to be something where you're asking these foundational questions, because if you just want a presence, okay. But like you're saying, Kennedy, if you want to monetize, you're putting out a ton of material. And this is not the only avenue that you can become a workaholic. Anybody can become
right.
a workaholic, except that the demand is higher here
right.
on social media. People want what they want and they want it all of the time. And so I think there are some positives. Like if you, I don't know if I ever want my kid on social media or on YouTube like this. But I think as they get older, if you want to teach some entrepreneurial skills and maybe just present like, this is what you have to do, but this is how you have to do it to make money.
Yeah.
Man, that teaches.
Well, and there's no way around the hustle.
No.
Right? I mean, I think mm-hmm. that when you watch Mr. Beast and he's like, I'm giving away a mansion for a dollar. You know, I've got a Lamborghini to give away. It's like it's raining luxury, right?
Yeah.
But Mr. Beast is like close to the most successful YouTuber
yep.
anywhere. And so it's like comparing yourself to Michael Jordan or something.
You know, something I just thought about, like as you were talking, Kristen, your kid might be willing to put in that hustle. They might be willing to put in the work, the 18 hours, what have you. But then they still may not succeed, because there is something about right. YouTubers. There's a likability factor. There's an attractiveness factor for maybe more so, again, towards other social media platforms than specifically YouTube. But so if your child is willing to do all that hustle and then it still doesn't work out because, you know, maybe they just didn't quite catch the wave, you know, to
yeah.
take them to the next level, then what's that going to do to their self-esteem? What's that going to do to, you know, their whole outlook on life?
And I think that's a big thing to mention, is that the vast majority of YouTube personalities, I got to tell you, if you were to meet them outside of YouTube, they do not talk or act that way in real
right.
life. Like, I'm just telling you right now, if you watch a Mr. Beast video and then you talk to him in real life, I guarantee he's not going to be like, hey, I just put 100 people on an island and
yeah.
the last one gets $1 million.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk like that in real life.
No.
That's all hyped up for the camera.
It is.
And a lot of that is true, even if it's not a game show-esque
right.
element. A lot of those reaction YouTubers, they're reacting more than they probably normally would in real
right.
life. It's a lot of this stuff is for clicks and views, because that's what you have to do in order to generate kind
yeah,
of views, which will get you money.
Right.
And if the views aren't getting you enough money, then you have to set up brand deals, sponsorships. You have to make your own merchandise just to stay profitable.
Well, and I tried to interrupt you a minute ago. I read a really fascinating article this week about Mr. Beast and about basically it was analyzing how he has really perhaps been the most influential person on YouTube in terms of establishing the paradigm for a successful video. And they interviewed him, and he has an entire team of people who are like Fortune 500 company ruthless in evaluating everything in that video. And he basically said, if anybody has any questions about whether this can get 100 million views in the next week, it's out the window. And I think you think of him as just this funny, likable guy. I mean, the dude is, he's got a corporation of people helping him create that content. And if you're just some kid watching him, you don't know that, you know?
But the thing is, too, that, I mean, we've been talking about Mr. Beast a lot, but these smaller YouTubers, and when I say smaller, I still mean those who are making the most of their money off of doing YouTube-esque stuff.
Yes.
So they still have millions of subscribers and stuff. But smaller than Mr. Beast YouTubers are still grabbing a lot of people for a team. Like, most of the people who make their YouTube videos at this point, if they're successful, they'll have an editor who's doing all the editing for them. And they'll have people who are making clips where it's like, okay, this is a good moment of the video, so we'll use that. And they'll reshoot, and they'll have planning out for months and stuff. It's not just like, I want to hop online and play a little bit of this game today, and then I'm going to record it and post it on YouTube. There's a lot of thought and stuff that goes into it, partially because of YouTube algorithms that prioritize certain types of videos over others. And that's actually, I'm going on a bit of a tangent right now, but that is actually one of the reasons as to why some of these YouTubers are talking about this is exhausting, because it's a constantly changing medium of, if you want to stay on top, you need to change with what the YouTube algorithm says you need to do. And if you don't, then we're not going to show your videos.
Yeah, and all the social media platforms are the same way. Mm-hmm. You got to game the algorithm.
I don't necessarily think, because Emily, you're talking about what if your child fails at this. A part of me kind of likes that. Because, like, my husband and I had a business that we sold. And on the outside, I think a lot of people that don't know what it's like to start your own thing think, wow, how cool. That's so cool. That's so easy. You get to do this fun thing. When the behind the scenes is grueling.
Yeah.
And so I think for a child, like, to be able to do that, not a child, okay, a teenager, a young adult, to be able to do something like that and have that placed before them, because often they'll go work at their Chick-fil-A job and they don't know what it's like behind the scenes. You're able to cultivate this understanding that says that nothing in life is free and nothing is easy, including this.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think that we can talk about hustle culture, and you see hustle culture clickbait articles online everywhere. Well, I did this and now I'm making millions.
I was up at 4:30 meditating before the sun even rose.
Exactly. Yes. Proverbs 31, the original hustle culture illustration.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we forget the work involved. Mm-hmm. And I think there are opportunities to teach work ethic, but there are also opportunities to see, wow, this is way, way, way harder than I thought it was going to be. And the progress potentially is slower. And let me say one other thing. I have a niece who actually started her own YouTube channel. Her parents didn't realize it. She's very attractive, very winsome. The camera loves her. And very quickly, the creeper contingent was there. And we haven't even talked about that.
No.
But I saw one of her videos and talk to my sister. I'm like, are you on top of this? Because the comments here are creep city. And I think anytime we're talking about having a minor online, you cannot avoid that. And if they're attractive and winsome enough to actually get a foothold, they're going to be creepers out there. And so they yanked it fairly shortly after that.
That's important.
So it's a side note, but I think it's an important one.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the main reasons for this conversation is that this isn't a blanket, like, don't be a YouTuber.
Right.
But this is simply a method of us saying, hey, this is not going to be as glamorous as you might think it is.
Yep.
There's a lot of it's a job, as
right.
you
it's
know Tom Scott had mentioned.
That's
this
right.
is still a job. And in essence, if you want to be a successful YouTuber, you're more of a businessman at this point than you are a content creator.
Yeah. Yep.
It is more about running this business. And sure, there are some YouTubers out there who are pure in the sense that it's
right.
just them and they're just doing it for fun.
Right.
And, you know, I've uploaded a couple of YouTube videos myself because I'm like, oh, this is fun.
Huh, right.
I'll throw it out there. I've never expected to make money off of any
right.
of those. But the point is that if you want to be super successful, you have to put in super hard work.
Yeah.
And you have to expect to be a bit disappointed by
yep.
how much more difficult it is than it looks.
Well, and one example of that, and then we'll begin to bring our conversation for today in for landing. During COVID, I rediscovered my comic book collection from my youth mm-hmm. and started collecting again and started watching a number of content creators on YouTube. And one of them is a guy named Swagglehoss. He is a movie and music video director in Hollywood. That's his main daytime gig.
Mm-hmm.
He does probably 3 or 4 videos a week. He's not quite daily. I think he has around 20,000 followers, which is relatively small, but most of his videos will get 10, 15, 20, 25,000 views, which, you know, in that small sort of niche is a lot. And he did a video recently. He said, yep, I looked at everything I did last year on YouTube. And he said, I got a check for $35. So
nice.
He said, I'm doing this because I love comic books and I love being involved in this community. He said, I ain't doing it for the money and mm-hmm. I have a day job. And I thought, man, this is a guy who's putting out top quality stuff 2 or 3 or 4 times a week. And he made $35 last year. And that was really telling to me.
Totally.
You know, that most folks are not driving Lamborghinis because they're on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I hope that as we have talked today, there have been a number of things that have stood out in this conversation, that if you have a tween or a teen who has an interest in being an influencer, it's not that it's necessarily a hard no, but that you can have that conversation about the reality of what it takes, the cost of what it takes, and the fact that this is hard work. And that doesn't always come through when, you know, you're watching somebody doing an unboxing or something that seems simple and fun. So especially in this world of social media permeating everything, I think this is a conversation we're going to keep having with our kids. But I hope this has been an encouraging and an enlightening one for you today. Well, in our second segment today, Bob Hoos is joining us to talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I joked in the intro, Bob, that it seems like it's not really Final Fantasy because
yeah.
there's always another one, and now they're going backwards.
Right, right. After 37 years, they will never hit the final Fantasy.
So has it been around 37 years?
37 years, yeah.
All right, so tell us about, I want to know about the franchise as a whole, because parents may have young gamers who are just getting into it.
Sure.
And tell us about that, and then what's specific about this game that we need to know about.
It would take me a couple of hours.
No kidding.
I mean, really.
It would take a couple of hours just to go through the MMORPG, Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah, I mean, it's it is an incredibly expansive and dense series. I think more than anything else, I could probably just...
And you've been there from the beginning.
Well, I could just sort of boil it down to the basic idea that Final Fantasy is like a blending of magic fantasy with science fiction.
Oh, so and something for everybody.
You sort of blend those two genres together, and then you have a lot of sword battles and blowing people up and shooting and all that.
Sounds like Dune.
It sounds like Dune. Yeah.
It is sort of. It does have that kind of feel only from a Japanese role-playing game perspective. In fact, I think probably you could logically say that Final Fantasy series is the most notable of the JRPGs.
Okay.
You know, everybody sort of...
And that's a Japanese role-playing game?
Right, right. And everybody turns to them as the ones to look to. And but as far as the storyline, oh, man, it is all over the place. And even the... You know, we're talking about the one game that we're talking about today, the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Even that is so dense and so complicated that I really couldn't explain the storyline to you. I mean, if we want to narrow it down, it's this particular game is about a power company that wants to use the energy of the planet. And that energy source is sort of like swirling past lives of people who have died that's sort of swirling in and around the planet. And they want to tap into it for an energy source. And of course, anybody in science fiction would tell you, oh, that's a bad idea.
I mean, that already sounds like an A24 bad film. Idea.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so the story's gotten a little bigger. And I think fans really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their favorite characters. And by the way, that's another thing. Yeah, I was talking about the story. The characters themselves are out there. You know, the central protagonist is a guy named Cloud. And
that's a good name.
Yeah, it is a fun name. And he's sort of coming into his power. And then the villain is this good guy who became a crazy villain. He was injected with the element, a part of an element of this 2,000-year-old creature that looks like a naked woman in a glass jar.
Ooh.
And so you think about that. Try and wrap your brain around all those different things and say, how does any of this make sense? I don't know, but but it's that kind of big game that I think fans will really enjoy.
So as you have talked about it, I would observe you have had a tremendous amount of energy even just describing it.
Yeah.
But obviously that last little bit, you know, talking about an image of a naked woman, I'm guessing right. There's some content here as well. So
there is.
Kids may be drawn to it, but what are the content concerns and the worldview concerns that parents need to know about?
Well, you can start out with that frenetic melee clashes. And by the way, again, since it's both fantasy and sci-fi, it's not just swords. It's also guns and explosives and cannons and zappy laser things and all this stuff that's going on. And when you sort of upgrade the graphics from back in 97, then you also upgrade the
content.
Messy content, you know. It's T-rated, but it's still bloody at times. You still have people impaled and killed and it's it can feel intense at times.
But it's not going to be as goopy as the M-rated stuff.
Right. But from a parent's perspective, they may step in and go, whoa, what is all this?
Yeah.
And then you've got language, too. In fact, there's more crude language in this game than I really anticipated. Mm. And I won't describe what that language is, but it's not it's not F-words or anything like that, but it is still crude language mm-hmm. that's scattered throughout. And then you've also got a little bit of that sensual content, mm-hmm. you know, this woman, like in the glass jar or glass container or whatever, isn't finely detailed, but you get the impression that, okay, this creature is naked in there. And there's some sensual tug and pull between two of the main characters, this guy Cloud and Tifa, his girlfriend. And there's that sexual tension all the way through. There's also that spiritual worldview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of those games that it's chock full of this sort of Far Eastern spiritual, it's out there at times. And I think from a Western perspective, we can sometimes look and go, man, this is really odd, really odd. And so you have to sort of wade your way through that.
That's of a piece
too.
With a lot of anime and
especially
manga,
JRPGs,
too.
JRPGs, right? Yeah. But those are the kinds of things that you'll run into that some parents will see as drawbacks.
Okay. Well, it sounds like there's a lot to navigate, and we have reviewed some other Final Fantasy games as well. So if you've got kids that are interested in this new one or any of the previous ones, you can come check out Bob's review at
pluggedin.com. And I would also say, before you sign off, I would also say that if people are going to dive into this, as I was saying with how complicated it is, if you're going to dive in, and especially with the Final Fantasy VII, probably start with the first in the trilogy, the remake. Because that'll help you get a context of who all these characters are.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Bob, for telling us everything we need to know about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
You bet.
Well, now it's time for something we like to call Name That Movie, where each of us gives a short description of a movie and the rest of us have to guess what it is. And because we've been talking about technology this week, I thought we would do a tech edition this week. And I'm going to get us started.
Okay.
Are y'all ready?
All right.
A cute little slightly annoying robot boy.
Wally.
Nope. Good guess, though.
He's not annoying.
Starts to ponder existential questions and justice and meaning in life. And he ends up at the bottom of the ocean, which frankly, I would have left him there, but there's 45 minutes more in this movie to try to redeem a story that really did not work very well at all. Bob, do you have it?
I do, but I can't remember the title. I can't remember the name.
A robot boy in the ocean.
It's with Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, AI, artificial intelligence. Oh,
AI. Look at you, Emily. Ooh, what a pro.
I've never actually seen it, but I knew that Haley Joel Osment was in it. And so I was like, I don't want to guess this on the off chance that that's not the plot.
No, it's Steven Spielberg's most annoying movie.
Yeah. I mean, it had a great beginning.
Yeah, the beginning was great.
Man, there were some emotional moments in that.
Yeah, and then it went downhill.
Ooh, baby.
All right, who's next?
I'll go. This isn't difficult.
Okay. I like not difficult.
A wealthy industrialist builds the suit that gives him the power he's always wanted. That's right.
You had me at wealthy industrialist. Yeah.
Tony Stark. A guy with a mustache.
And some wit.
Who is Tony Stark?
How does he describe himself in one of the Avengers movies? He's like billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah.
There, that would have gotten the job done, too. Kennedy, you next?
Yep. We've all heard the saying that time is money, and that's the plot of this movie, too.
Oh, I know what it is, but I can't remember the name.
Time is money.
Time is money.
Starring Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried.
Oh!
It's going to drive me nuts.
It was a Netflix show, right?
I have watched so many
clips about this. It's unreal, and I can't remember the name of the movie. I don't know. What is it?
The movie is called End Time.
I had nothing. I thought I was on track, and then you said Justin Timberlake. I'm like, whoop, nope, not the movie I'm thinking of.
You know what's really funny? I remember seeing previews for that movie growing up. I've never actually seen it, though.
Well, as I was doing my research, I discovered that Cillian Murphy's in this movie, too, and I never knew that.
He has my favorite superhero movie quote of all time. It's the Batman. Emily. You're up next.
Alrighty then. A man re-enters normal life after playing way too much VR.
The Truman Show. Matrix.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you got it, Adam. That was it.
So was it the Truman Show or the Matrix?
No, it was the Matrix.
That's they both spoke at the same time.
As you said, that makes more sense.
All right. Now, actually, I came to the table without one in mind, so I'm sort of winging this one in case you think it's really weak. But here we go.
No judgment.
As kids, we generally protect our toys.
Toy Story.
No.
Imaginary.
As kids, we generally protect our toys. In this case, the young girl is protected.
Oh, it's Megan.
I was going to let him finish, and then I was going to jump on it.
Yeah, it's Megan.
Yeah. That's
all
it.
All right. Well, thank you guys for another...
Did we all do them?
Yeah. We all did.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We're just really good.
I guess I was over here trying to think of one, and I missed it.
We were very, very efficient with our movies this week, so we will play this one again somewhere down the road. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions. And if you're listening today, we want to thank you for joining our conversation this week. We hope that it equips and challenges you to think about, you know, the things we've talked about today, social media. You've got... You know, a young person in your house thinking, man, I want to be a social media star. I think that hopefully we gave you some things to think about. And Bob, you gave us a fantastic overview of the complexity of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and some things to keep in mind there as well. So what did you think about our two conversations today? Are your kids interested in pursuing social media fame? If so, we would love to hear from you. And here's how you can let us know what you think. You can go to thepluggedinshow.com and leave us a voicemail or reach out to us at team@thepluggedinshow.com. And of course, you can always find us on Facebook and Instagram. Well, before we wrap up this week, I want to let you know again how excited we are about the arrival of our new book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. It's available now. It'll help you understand how and why entertainment and technology have the ability to influence us. And it'll give you some strategies for dealing with this area of your life, just like we talk about every week on the Plugged In Show. And so today, for a gift of any amount to Focus on the Family, we would love to send you a copy of The Screen Savvy Family. And you'll find information on how to do that in the episode notes for today's show. Well, as always, we know that you have a lot of different ways that you can spend your time. We are honored that you have chosen to spend some of that time at the table with us today, and we look forward to joining you again next week for another conversation on The Plugged In Show.
God wants true disciples, ones that think like Him, talk like Him, walk like Him, disciples that bring shalom to the chaos of this world. Pursue that path with the RVL Discipleship Series. Bible scholar Ray Vanderlaan will give you the tools to understand the Bible more deeply and inspire you to be a passionate follower of Christ. Watch the first episode at rvldiscipleship.com.